Greetings. This is Richard Solon.
And I'm Kendall Solon.
And this is Solon and Solon, Letters to the Inquiring Mind on Theology and Scripture. This is Richard Solon. The podcast I'm sharing today is a sermon entitled Consider Yourself Important. It's based on an incident recorded in the 8th chapter of the book of Acts. An official from the court of the Queen of Ethiopia is riding in his chariot returning home from an event in Jerusalem. And then Philip happens to hear him as he's riding along. The official, it would be reading aloud because that was the practice that day, in those days, and it remained the practice to read aloud, not silently, until the time of Augustine. Augustine tells in his Confessions how surprised he was to discover that Bishop Ambrose read silently. His idea hadn't occurred to him. At any rate, Philip discovers that he's reading from the book of Isaiah and asks him if he understands. He doesn't. After Philip has explained, he wants to be baptized. And so this sermon tells about the influence that this one individual must have had in the history of Christianity that followed.
Our scripture lesson comes from the 8th chapter of the book of Acts. Then an angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Get up and go toward the south, to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is a wilderness road." So he got up and went. Now there was an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of the Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, in charge of her entire treasury. He had come to Jerusalem to worship and was returning home. Seated in his chariot, he was reading the prophet Isaiah. Then the Spirit said to Philip, "Go over to the chariot and join it." So Philip ran up to it and heard him reading from the prophet Isaiah. He asked, "Do you understand what you are reading?" He replied, "How can I, unless someone guides me?" And he invited Philip to get in and sit beside him. Now the passage of the scripture that he was reading was this: "Like a sheep he was led to the slaughter, and like a lamb silent before its shearer, so he does not open his mouth. In his humiliation, justice was denied him. Who can describe his generation? For his life is taken away from the earth." The eunuch asked Philip, "About whom, may I ask you, does the prophet say this? About himself or about someone else?" Then Philip began to speak, and starting with this scripture, he proclaimed to him the good news about Jesus. As they were going along the road, they came to some water. And the eunuch said, "Look, here is water. What is to prevent me from being baptized?" He commanded the chariot to stop, and both of them, Philip and the eunuch, went down into the water, and Philip baptized him. When they came up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord snatched Philip away. The eunuch saw him no more, and went on his way rejoicing. But Philip found himself at Azotus. And as he was passing through the region, he proclaimed the good news to all the towns until he came to Caesarea. May the Lord add his blessing to the reading and the hearing of his word.
Our older members, one who was essentially homebound, her husband passed away about a year ago, and she has been making her way through his
his things. In the process, she found an old newspaper, and she had laid it out on the dining room table for me to see. It had been published on Thursday, July the 8th, 1790. And as you can imagine, the paper had broken wherever it had been folded, so it was mainly pieces. Paper is that way. The books of the Bible were written in paper. Actually, we get the word paper from the Greek word papyrus, the reed which grows in the marshes of the Nile River, from which paper was originally made. And of course, they too are fragile, and over time, they too broke and disappeared. So we have no copy of the original books of the Bible as they were written, either as a gospel or a letter. It's all the more startling, therefore, to realize that the oldest fragment of the New Testament is a portion of the 18th chapter of the Gospel according to St. John, which was discovered in the walls of a casket made out of papyrus. And those fragments date to some time, because it's impossible to date them precisely, between 100 and 150 A.D. That means that those fragments come within a lifetime, perhaps 75 years or less, when the original gospel was written. What is even more startling is that the fragment found there in that casket wall was found on the island of Elephantine, hundreds of miles up the Nile River in Egypt. One can't help but wonder how and when did the gospel get that far? Far from Jerusalem. And of course, the passage which was read to us this morning by Betty gives us a hint. Here, an Ethiopian, not a Jew, but one who is probably a proselyte or at least attracted to Judaism, whom the Jews called God-fearers, has been in Jerusalem. Maybe he was there representing the court as well. He's on his way back to Ethiopia, south of Egypt. And on the way, as he rides in his chariot, he's reading a copy of the book of Isaiah. That probably was written on vellum. He could afford it. Vellum is of course, sheepskin or calfskin, and would be easy to read and easy to preserve. And the Ethiopian is then accompanied by Philip. It's kind of a miraculous appearance. And oftentimes, we look upon events like that coming together, one person searching and the other person answering as a kind of miracle. And there Philip is. The Ethiopian says, "How can I understand unless somebody guides me?" And Philip then tells the story of Jesus. And the Ethiopian desires to be baptized. And he says, "Here's some water. Let me be baptized." Now, Philip could not have given the Ethiopian a copy of the Gospel of John. It hadn't been written, wouldn't be written for 20, 30 or more years. Nothing else had been written of the New Testament. No letters of Paul. The only thing that Philip had to share was what he himself knew. Oral tradition, we call it. And we don't know what happened to the Ethiopian. All we know is that the oldest fragment of the New Testament ever discovered is a fragment of the Gospel of John found on a papyrus casket hundreds of miles up the Nile River on the way to Ethiopia. Now, there's a principle in physics that intrigues me. It's called the butterfly effect. I like the name. It says simply that a little change, when amplified over time, can have enormous effect. A butterfly flapping its wings in China, a couple of months later, can produce a thunderstorm over New York City. Well, it's a kind of a humorous analogy, because everybody knows there's more than one butterfly, and there are other things influencing the weather. But removing all other factors. That's what could happen. Now, we all are acquainted from our school days with the butterfly effect. We memorize it this way. For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of the horse, the captain was lost. For want of the captain, the battalion was lost. For want of the battalion, the battle was lost. For want of the battle, the war was lost. For want of the war, the kingdom was lost. That's the butterfly effect. A very little thing. Philip meeting an Ethiopian on the way home can have enormous effect. I wonder about that Ethiopian. Did he tell others, or were that those folks in Elephantine dependent upon someone else? Take Philip. Philip was one of the 12 apostles. So was Judas. Betrayal of Jesus was a single act. But Judas' betrayal was a self-destructive act. That is to say, the effect of Jesus upon Judas stops there. In any positive sense, I suppose we can say that the betrayal of Judas has caused the rest of us to examine ourselves. But at least we know that Philip's faithfulness to Jesus led to the Ethiopian, and perhaps the Ethiopian to that community there on the island of Elephantine. Some years ago, I've told this story before, but it's a good story. Peggy and I were hundreds of miles up the Nile River, in a town that was already thousands of years old when Jesus was born, a place called Luxor. It was Sunday morning. We decided to go visit a temple down the way, and we took the path. The path led up on top of the levee protecting the town of Luxor from the waters of the Nile. So broad was the levee that buildings had been constructed on the top of it, and like a Boston row of houses on Bay Street, those houses, those buildings were all connected together, built out of mud, brick, then plastered over and whitewashed or given some pastel color. And as we walked on the top of that levee down towards the temple, here came toward us a woman and her child. Now, what was different about this woman and this child from all the women and all the children that we had seen, because it was a hot and dusty place even in October, was that she was freshly washed, her clothes were clean, the child had just been scrubbed, his clothes were clean, and I said to Peggy, they're on their way to Sunday school. So we turned around and followed them at a discreet distance, and they kept walking, then they turned in towards the row of buildings, went through a gate, as did we, and then went into a building, into a side door, it looked like that, and we followed them into the building, dark on the inside. And then when the candlelight began to reveal what was there, a service, a Christian service, was taking place. A Coptic Christian mass was occurring with the priest and his incense, the candles all lighted. And indeed, they were on their way to church. One can't help but wonder, well, was that Christian community established off the community that was down there at Elephantine? Did the Ethiopian pass this way? Let me tell you a little bit more about that newspaper. I was struck by it, struck by its age. Remember that, my memory, I didn't have a chance to look this up, didn't look it up. As I remember that just a couple years before the Bill of Rights was affirmed, confirmed by the states, 1790. There on the front page, right down the left two columns, was a name of a society. The newspaper, by the way, called itself the Virginia Gazette and Petersburg Intelligencer. As some nodding heads, still exist? No. Petersburg newspaper. And it was the preamble and constitution and bylaws of this Virginia society, just establishing itself, calling for new members. And there on the front of that newspaper in the year 1790, July the 8th, they stated that their purpose was to bring about the abolition of slavery, the betterment of the condition of freed slaves and others unlawfully held in bondage. This is how the preamble reads. From a full belief that the Lord's mercy is over all his works, that he created mankind in every nation, language, and color equally free, and that slavery in all its forms, in all its degrees, is an outrageous violation and an odious degradation of human nature, that it is inconsistent with the precepts of the gospel of doing to others as we would they should do unto us, and that it is not only a moral but a political evil, etc., etc. That they were flapping their wings, trying to bring about a butterfly effect. And I can't help but wonder about my own great-grandfather, who was an owner of slaves. That was the year 1790. They were flapping their wings, as I say, hoping that others would join them in their cause of righteousness. Slavery was contrary to the precepts of the gospel. What suffering could have been avoided if our ancestors had responded like a Philip to carry the message a little further, to share it with someone, conviction about the essence of Scripture. Faithfulness to Christ in our own lives, flapping of the wings of a butterfly. But when they are amplified through time, the baptism of one's own child, the telling of the story to one's own child can have enormous effect. I wonder what issues are in our morning paper which 204 years from now our children's children's children will be wishing we had taken to heart.
You've been listening to Solon and Solon, Letters to the Inquiring Mind on Theology and Scripture. If you're enjoying this series, please take a moment and rate us on iTunes. You can learn more about this podcast at solonandsolon.com.